This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County welcoming you to the September edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show, the second Monday of each month on WPKN 89.5 FM, bringing you news and information about the arts and culture across coastal Fairfield County. Throughout the pandemic, when virtually all cultural institutions and venues have been shuttered, most artists, producers, gallery directors, and others have been forced into finding ways of recreating themselves online, learning new skills, finding their way around Zoom, Facebook Live, Vimeo, and many other new tools and media. Today, we have with us 12 guests, artists, painters, designers, teachers, theater producers, a poet, a puppeteer, a videographer, and an arts council director, each describing the silver linings, the great discoveries they've made by going virtual. I'd like to introduce our guests today. We have 12 guests, something we can't really do in the radio studio ourselves. We are on recording on Zoom. We can just about fit four people into the WPKN studio, so we're taking advantage of the capabilities of being virtual ourselves. So I'd like to introduce artist, designer, and podcast host, Migs Burrows. Welcome, Migs.
Thank you.
Visual artist Alicia Cobb. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, David.
Experiential designer, video artist, and founder of the Danger Gallery, Holly Danger. Hi, Holly.
Hi, David.
Painter, sculptor, and violist Joseph DeModi.
Hi, David.
Welcome, Joseph.
Thank you.
Designer and arts nonprofit board president Mark Hannon. Hello, Mark.
Hello, David.
Artist, educator, curator, and student, Nadia Martinez. Welcome, Nadia.
Hi, David.
Fiber artist, teacher, and bassist, Susie Mastro Pietro. Hi, Susie. Poet, painter, and teacher, Shanna Melton. Hello, Shelton. Shanna, sorry.
Hi, David.
Arts Council Director and Theatre Producer, Paige Miglio. Welcome,
hello, everyone.
Paige. Mixed Media Performing Artist, Puppeteer and Theatre Director, Adelka Polak.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
Nonprofit Leader, Musician and Teacher, Rob Sylvan. Hi, Rob.
Glad to be here.
And Arts Advocate, Theatre Producer and Actor, Lou Ersone. Welcome, Lou, and welcome, everyone.
Hi, David.
So, let's see, where do we begin? You know, the title of our show today is Great Discoveries from Going Virtual. But our first title for the show was Going Digital, Going Global. And in speaking with you all, it seems many of you had that moment of shock in realizing what you got yourselves into, that once you started teaching, performing, producing on the web, you'd gone global. You're no longer just in Stamford or Milford. You're accessible to audiences around the world, and people find you. So I'd love to hear from you about what you remember of that shock and surprise of suddenly finding you had the world right there in your studio or bedroom. So let's start with Adelka. I remember your comments. You're a dancer, puppeteer, a mask performer, and movement director. You founded the Sova Theatre, a visual performing arts company, working across New York and New England with arts venues, schools, and community organizations. I should also mention that you and Joseph DeModi, also on the show today, were both winners of our virtual innovation challenge that we ran this summer with the help of an anonymous benefactor that we did as an incentive for artists in all media to create innovative, interactive online programs to generate income and start some sustainability going. So I'd like to acknowledge both of you. Congratulations for winning that contest.
Thank you.
Delka, back to you, and tell us a little bit about your how you regrouped and reconceived yourself online when the pandemic hit.
Yeah, so a tidal wave is a really great word to describe it, absolutely, in regards to the number of students that I work with generally in the public school systems as a teaching artist and puppeteer. I generally tend to work with at least 1,000 students in Hartford alone, and also beyond that in New York City and in Fairfield County as well. So this was quite a shock to suddenly have that energy of that classroom gone. So I had to really try to re-envision what that classroom was like. And immediately on day one, Monday morning when school was canceled, I decided to do a Facebook live stream right away just to see if who it could reach. I had no idea whether it would reach my students or not. That I was to work with that week, but I found that I ended up reaching people all over the world then instead. So it was fantastic. I had people tuned in from, you know, the town right next door, Ridgefield, Bethel, and also much further in the country of Egypt and Turkey and all over the country. So it was amazing to be able to get a sort of classroom of a 1,000 all-in-one program instead of 1,000 throughout the school year in a way. So that I just took a chance with it.
How long did that take to ramp up to 1,000 people from around the world?
Well, people just kept sharing it throughout the week, I think. So it was probably within a week or two of people sharing the first live stream. And it kind of kept going in that way. I haven't been doing those live streams as much anymore, but I'm going to restart them again now that the school year is started, because I'm going to be missing being in the classroom as a teaching artist for sure. So,
Now, Alicia Cobb, we know you as a painter, specifically a body painter, but you've you more into this direction. I want to talk about the impact on teaching in more detail a bit later. But Alicia, could you tell us something about your own experience of realizing that you had this increasingly diverse set of students in your classroom on your screen?
Yeah. So I much like Adelka, I actually didn't have plans to go as virtual. What happened was I got email after email, canceled gig after canceled gig.
Yes.
And I didn't panic, but immediately I was like, all right, we're going to have to find a way to get through this. And I saw parents on my timeline, on my social media, freaking out. They were nervous about how they're going to homeschool their kids. What are they going to do with their kids? And immediately I was like, what can I do to help? Like, it wasn't so much about money for me at that time. It was really, what can I do to help? Because what am I going to do to kind of keep myself sane in the process? And how am I going to help others? And so I decided to go live on Facebook and start offering just general, fun, kind of loose art classes just for people to get, just for people to get creative and have fun, not knowing if I would get anybody at all. And it ended up the first time I went live, I got over 500 people, not knowing where they were from or anything. And then consistently, I actually ended up doing these classes over a period of 11 weeks, 5 times per week. So in all, over 50 classes, which was really cool. And I had people internationally, Russia, Turkey, the Netherlands. I had people, and the kids from Russia didn't even speak English, but they followed along with the step-by-step things that I did, which I thought was really cool, because it's like art is a universal language. So even though there was an actual language barrier, they were still able to follow along step by step with what I was doing.
That's pretty interesting. Shanna, you are a poet and painter, and you've also have a growing reputation as a teacher, but you've mentioned your experience performing and realizing what a fluid audience you have out there. Can you talk a little bit about that, Shanna?
Yeah, I've been able to do some poetry readings, and I had my first virtual art opening, and I was able to share poetry that way and talk about my artwork. And I also had the experience where it was people from all over the place. It really expanded my my accessibility and allowed me to have a whole new audience that I don't want to say I wouldn't have here, because I have a great audience here, but people who I would have a harder time reaching were definitely present, and it's been really supportive. I found the same thing with my writers group as well.
Right. So, Migs Burrows, I know you've commented on this. You've developed your own radio interview show, except it's a global podcast. Remind me of its name.
Yes, I do it with my brother, and it's called Oh Brother, Not Another Podcast.
So what's your sense of reaching beyond the well-known and loved confines of, say, the Westport Library with your podcasts?
Yeah, well, it's been great. I mean, it's been growing. We've done about 30 so far. We're speeding up things. Actually, just this morning, we interviewed Chris France, the founder of Talking Heads. So we get to reach people that, I mean, he's close by, but, you know, you still can't go to his house and he can't come here. But we've talked to people in Jerusalem and California and local people. So, yeah, it's really a sense of community among creative people. We, you know, try to basically stick to interviewing artists, musicians, actors, actresses, even an oyster fisherman. So we just try to keep ourselves entertained and engaged. And, you know, we're all used to artists or solitary people by nature, I guess. But when you look around and you don't even see anybody, you know, you sort of yearn for the weekends when you can mingle and go somewhere and catch up with your fellow artists like we are here.
So was the stimulus the pandemic?
Well, I have to give credit. The Westport Library initiated it. I had been artist in residence there a year or two ago, and we did a lot of this kind of content in on site. And then when he realized that, you know, what are they going to do? I'm not the only one, but they're trying to develop content, you know, virtual content. And then they partnered with the Quick Center, who also promotes our podcast, and it's on iTunes. It's on Spotify. So we're out there. We don't have millions of viewers or listeners. We don't even know how many, but we're out there.
That's great. Now, Holly, you have a studio and gallery in Stamford, and throughout this period, you've been developing a regular experimental interactive new media show every Wednesday and Saturday. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We started back in March in our living room when we were seeing so many musicians performing online. You know, you could kind of go on at any time and see, you know, guitar players and electronic music producers, and everyone was doing that. And so it really inspired me to kind of take my entire, you know, just all the equipment from my gallery and set it up in my living room at home. And so that developed a program that I called the Living Room Lounge. And we had a lot of fun kind of setting it up. So the Danger Gallery that I run is an immersive art space complete with 360-degree visual projections. And so what I did was I took over my living room and I did the exact same thing in the in my living room and performed one-hour live audio-visual sets, where essentially I was acting as a DJ and creating live visuals in the room. And, you know, it was funny, as we've developed this over time, we've now hit 40 shows, doing it every Wednesday and Saturday since March. And we've really learned how to kind of push the envelope with the production value, really pushing like the free, there's like a lot of free software out there that you can use. And we've reached a lot of people from all over the world. In fact, somebody from Seoul, South Korea reached out to me recently. And now all of a sudden I have one of my installations in Seoul, Korea, because they happened to tune in and watch our show one night. So it's definitely opened the audience for us.
Did you notice how that sort of global audience was growing over the period of time? Was it a slow, gradual increase, or
Yeah, yeah, slow and gradual for sure. I think we get about 400 views a night, so I think that's still kind of small, but I also look at what I'm doing as kind of a very niche market that's actually not even very popular in the United States. It's actually more popular outside of the United States. And so I've made it my mission to kind of bring it here, bring it local, you know, while we're defining what local is. Local is kind of something different now, right. You know, and we were doing live stream shows before March, but we've kind of like really developed it as a program for a live stream audience now. So it's changed a lot over the last few months.
Now, Paige Milio, you run the Milford Arts Council and MAC, which is a theater, cabaret, and exhibition space in the old train station of Milford. So I think you have a story about your first exhibit that went online just as the pandemic was getting underway.
Yeah, so we shut our doors at the MAC on March 15th. It was the day before we received 125 juried works for our photo expo, and which we never got the chance to even hang. Right. So as unfortunate as that was, we promised everybody that the work would be viewed and shown, and we learned how to put together a virtual gallery. We included all 185 pieces that were actually submitted in the show, rather than just the 125 juried ones. Typically, our hung exhibits have an audience in a few hundred people who wander through our doors and during their duration of being hung. But this virtual experience opened our eyes to what our expanded audience could be tenfold. So we had actually, in the month that it was viewed, or a few weeks that it was viewed, we had 3,100 views and votes for People's Choice, which was just amazing. So since then, we learned StreamYard. We put together little one-act plays with our theater group Eastbound, called Homebound with Eastbound, and we did monthly productions online, and we just developed a whole line of classes to take people through the cold months coming up.
What's the range of countries that you know that people are connecting with you from?
So our writers group is actually gone virtual every single week instead of meeting in live twice a month. They have people from across the country. So they've got members from Utah, Idaho, who meet regularly with them. Our sand sculpture contest just went virtual for the first time after 43 years of being with 500 people on Walnut Beach. And we had probably 5,000 shares all the way to Mexico and Argentina. We had submissions from the Cape and from a couple of the outskirts island areas, but it's just been amazing, the exposure that going digital has brought us.
So I'd like to turn to Lua Sohn at Curtin Call in Stamford. And now this might be true for you too, Lou, but I gather that for many producing companies, theaters and symphonies, it wasn't so much about discovering new audiences and across the globe as cementing your regular audiences. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you found when you did do some productions online?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I learned early on in my career from people far more educated and experienced than I was at the time was that audiences are fickle. And, you know, if you go dark for even a brief period, getting people back into the habit of being with you is really tough. So it was very important for me to make sure that we made a connection with our audience. And that was through my insanity of pledging to our audiences from March 17th until our lights went back on, that I would send a daily message and brief video clip from our archives, you know, 45 seconds a minute, whatever. And I did that for about 127 some odd days until we turned the lights on our outdoor Shakespeare stage. So our lights were on. I was off the hook for daily. But it was definitely incredibly appreciated by our audience members. You know, we've got about 12,000 names on our email list. And I must have heard from at least 25% of them in one way or another, with people sending email notes back, people dropping off books to me based on the topics that I had been writing about, sharing stories with me from their high school and college productions that they hadn't thought about in 40 or 50 years. So it was a great way of us maintaining a connection with our regular base, so that when we did start streaming past productions that we have recorded, creating new content through virtual cabarets, our audience was there for us, and like everybody else, started seeing, you know, connections from, I've got some family in Italy, and all across the country, and all around, friends in London, you know, that have stayed in touch with us over the years. So it really is amazing to see the reach that we have now. And it's certainly not going to be our business model. We're about live theater. We're about being in person with people. So for me, right now we can only have an audience of 25 less staff to be indoor. So as long as we can be outside on the lawn where we've been, you know, since July, we might as well stay outside. And that's kind of our business plan for now.
Right. We might pick that up again, because it would be interesting to see whether you let it go completely, or whether the online skills that you've learned, you'll actually be putting into use in the future. But who knows what that's going to look like right now.
Yeah, I don't think we'll let it go completely, but God willing, at some point soon, we'll be able to do what we do normally and regularly. But until then, we'll rely on every possible way of staying in touch with people.
If you're just joining us, this is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County with our September edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. Today, our topic is great discoveries from going virtual. And we're talking with 12 guests, artists, painters, designers, teachers, theater producers, a poet, a puppeteer, a videographer, and an arts council director, each describing the silver linings, the great discoveries they have made by going virtual. Now, what struck me in our earlier discussions was that this global audience often wasn't just there static, but many of you were actively interacting with it, so much so that many of you felt you were actually building a new sense of community. Adelka, I remember in our earlier discussions, you're talking about your sense of knitting people together, isolated people out there together in what you were, the new thing that you were creating.
Yeah, so during my virtual summer series, Marvelous Metamorphosis, it was funded by the Connecticut Office of the Arts, and I was really thrilled to have the Zoom workshop format for those workshops, because we were able to connect with multi-generations. So I had my youngest student was a one-year-old, and my oldest student was in her 80s. So, you know, we were able to really tie a really amazing mix of generations and backgrounds and experiences. So I had the 1-year-old boy had a mother who was isolating with him in Massachusetts, but they normally live in New York City, because they were isolating from her husband, who is a first responder in New York City. So he loves to draw, and they were making puppets with me and enjoying also my introductory puppet shows and to the workshops, and just information about nature, which is what I love to weave into all of my work. And so there were children who were making puppets in the workshops, and then there were also teachers who were interested in uplifting their virtual formats as well, and trying to figure out, well, how could I create better visuals for my own classroom? So they were essentially taking professional development. They were taking the classes as professional development, which is what I'm going to continue this fall on my own. And then also parents who were just interested in how to also engage their kids at home in a better way. Well, maybe not better way, but rather a healthy and playful way, you know, rather than you have to do your math homework right now. If a puppet tells you that it doesn't know how to do its math homework, then maybe the kid could help the puppet do math homework, you know? So it became a new way to weave a lot of different generations, including there was one adult who has autism, and she just thought that this was the coolest workshop, and she's one of my favorite people now in terms of having been able to connect with and uplift people who, yeah, were essentially were able to isolate together. That's exactly how I put it, yeah.
Joseph, you were actively invented a way of creating a new community through your artwork. Could you tell us a bit about a piece of the puzzle, which was one of the prize winners in our virtual innovation challenge?
Sure, David, thanks. It was a way for me to keep creating artwork, and in a way, a project that I had started over a year ago with the one painting was 55 tiles, and each tile now, because of this virtual innovation challenge and thinking creatively how to use a piece of art to connect people. So, you know, you buy a piece of art, you're connected to the artist, you may look at the painting, you may think of the artist if you know them, and maybe your connection or relationship. But this particular piece is 55 tiles that make up one large painting. And through the challenge, I had to figure out a way to have each person who bought the tile to be connected in a way that could be more interactive. Originally, it was just they bought the tile, they hung it on the wall, they just knew that they were part of a bigger puzzle. That's why it's called the piece of the puzzle. But through this challenge, I was able to use Zoom, use an online gaming platform, and through my website, have ways to interact through maps and commentary through people who bought the pieces, could then send me some inspiring words or personal reaction to the project or maybe to their quarantine experience. And now they're all connected with each other. And in the long run, we have about another dozen pieces to account for, and we will put the puzzle back together through Zoom. And actually just this morning, I made a private Facebook group that everyone can now, who owns a piece of the puzzle, can join and interact with each other, and they don't have to wait for this, you know, ending party through Zoom.
So they really communicate one with another.
The idea, yeah, I was thinking of it how it's a little miniature social network now that there are 55 people or up to 55 people that are now connected that can socialize with each other because they all have something in common, not just in common, but they actually have a piece of artwork that is attached physically to another person that they may or may not know.
Where is this going to go? Do you have a sense? I mean, will you be doing further iterations of this?
I think so. I definitely plan on creating another semi-identical project, but inevitably when you do another project, new things come up, new ideas come in, and new things in the world come at you, and you just sort of adapt. So we'll see what happens.
So two directions I'd like to take this from this discussion of somehow creating a new community out of this new situation, that several of you have commented on this kind of paradoxical sense of intimacy that comes from working, performing, or teaching online. Nadia, you, I think, articulated it the best, I think. Now, you recently curated an online exhibit, but you've also been teaching as well. Tell us a little bit about that sense, that paradoxical sense of working with strangers, but then somehow becoming quite intimate with them.
Yeah, I actually have been involved in so many things online that it was crazy to all of a sudden, from knowing somebody a little bit, all of a sudden you are entering into their home and sharing spaces in a way. So it was from teaching online, people that I've never met before, or even people that I continue, but all of a sudden everybody's in their own environment and feeling this that nobody knew what was happening, right? So these insecurities. So I guess it became a little bit more, everybody was less guarded when it came to share things online, even if it was a classroom or if it was a shared studio time with some of my classmates from my grad program. And even sharing with people that I had recently met through the exhibition that I curated. So it was interesting and very strange way to interact with people than just being in person.
Right. And have you, can you say you've developed an ongoing relationship with many of those people, or was it transitory?
No, we actually I had to take a little bit of a break.
Uh-huh.
And it just became too many Zoom meetings, too much interaction that I had to take a little bit of a break, but I still kept in touch with people through email or text, and even the ones that I was the one to initiate, I was asked if I was planning to continue it during the fall or even later on, just as a part of something new, just creating relationships.
Right.
And more conversations.
And another of my favorite stories is with Rob Sylvan. Rob, you direct Keys, a program that teaches music one-on-one in the schools, mostly Bridgeport schools. But then when you had to move online, you weren't restricted to the schools or to working on the logistics of the school buses. You were right inside your students' homes. Can you tell us a little bit about how that changed things for you?
Yeah, well, it was very sudden, as we were an in-school pull-out program, 600 kids through 25 schools in Bridgeport, and doing musical instruments of all kinds. And then one on a Friday, it closed. And we had about a week to figure it out. And a lot of the faculty, there's 30, 35 people on the faculty, and some were really unfamiliar with, technology. But somehow I think it's because there's this spirit that we're all talking about here that the show must go on.
Right.
That's what really... It's the life current of the arts. And so we just got it together. And, it's not a very advanced technologically area, Bridgeport. There was just a lot of families with just phones. And so we just used Facebook if we had that. We used WhatsApp. We used Skype. We used whatever we could get to carry on with lessons. And there were... nobody was expecting it. How many advantages came from that? That the students really needed the one-to-one. They weren't getting any one-to-one attention anymore. There was very little, even Zoom classes that were going on from March to June. And so their contact with their teacher, which is a really intimate relationship, retained and kept them with a sense that this is something normal is happening. You know, there's some sense of normalcy here. And the advantages were that they really needed that. They practiced more. I think every teacher talked about their students that just got better faster than they'd ever noticed it before. It was partly because they had the time, but partly because there was just, maybe they had the energy too, and they were just more motivated. In the schools, there's distractions, there's noise, there's other teachers pulling at them, and it's all what it's supposed to be. But at home, you know, it's just different. They're home with, and teachers got to know the families and the right. siblings and the pets. And
right.
and it just, you know, it was a very strong thing. Went right through the summer. We did summer school. And I don't know that you mentioned it. Lou mentioned the video. It just has the spirit of kids wanting to learn to play music. We were able to keep it going.
Yeah, this is a great video that you've just made on the summer school that Keys runs, which I recommend everybody to see on your website. What's the website address?
Keysmusic.org.
Keysmusic.org, great. And Alicia, although it gets us close to teaching again, which I'll like to get into in a moment, but you commented that almost because of what you called a much greater needed level of attention that is required in virtual teaching, you came to a greater or deeper knowledge of your students than you might normally do.
Yeah, I felt like when I teach in a classroom, you know, you're seeing the kids face to face, and it's a very different experience than being online. And when I started teaching online, I noticed the need to pay closer attention. There's a screen between us, but making sure I acknowledged them regularly, making sure they knew I was paying attention to what they were doing. And even them, like, you know, if they noticed that I hadn't called on them or whatever, they would make sure that they, you know, they let themselves kind of be seen. They'll hold up an assignment and tell me to take a look at it. And I just felt like in general, it was a different level of intimacy online. And at first it was very strange. It was very weird because you're used to face-to-face, but it works out really well. And all the students that I had continued with me. I ended up switching over from the free program to a paid program over the summer. And I had close to 20 families that signed up because I was charging per household versus per student because I wanted to make sure it was affordable.
Yeah.
And accessible, since people, you know, we're all experiencing a pandemic. And so I want to help, but I also want to be able to eat. So, but it forced an intimacy. And these are people that I'm almost positive will continue with me for a long time to come.
Great. Thank you. So just this could have, the other transition I wanted to talk about finding a new sense of community is also somehow finding a new space. We talked a little bit about that with Keys and how transitioning from being in the schools one-on-one to now being in their homes with their families and their pets, there was somehow a new space. And I think my favorite story here is from Mark Hannon, president of the Coastal Arts Guild, about to change its name, Mark, I think, to the Arts Alliance of Stratford.
Actually, we are the Arts Alliance of Stratford officially. We just haven't made the big announcement yet.
Okay, I will use that name going forward. But you've been in existence for how long?
Since 2007.
And one of the problems was finding a home for years. You never had a place where you could mount an exhibit or have a show, or you were kind of a traveling circus setting up tents in different spots. And then just when you found a place, you tell the story.
We actually did work with the Milford Arts Council for a while when we came back to Stratford, but then we partnered with the Sterling House Community Center. It's a really wonderful facility here in Stratford. But in March, everything, including them, shut down, and we had been offering our figure drawing classes there, and everything had to stop. And so we were just trying to figure out how to regroup. And then in early April, I was contacted by one of our figure models who told me that he had been hired by SUNY Purchase to model on Zoom for their figure drawing students. And he wanted to offer the same thing to us. And when he first pitched this to me, it sounded ridiculous. But I just decided we should try it. And so we offered a free session, and I put an email out to all of our regulars, and we included it on Facebook and Meetup. And so a lot of our regulars returned to try this out, but then people from California, Maine, Nebraska, and Puerto Rico found us on Google searches, and they came too. This was a free session we did as a test. and it went better than we expected. So we started offering two sessions a month, and it's been going well. We have been averaging between about 16 and 20 people each time from all over the country. Wow. Our models are now all over from all over the country too. And we have now added two additional sessions. So it's four sessions a month that we offer. One is short poses, one is long poses. And it has been quite successful. And, you know, people keep coming back to draw on Zoom.
That's great.
We are, you know, we would like to expand that. We would like to offer some other arts classes online. And so we are actively looking for instructors to do workshops. And this could be for anything like the visual arts, painting, photography, sculpture, writing and poetry, music, and the dramatic arts. If anybody is interested in working with us, I mean, we will pay the teachers. We have a webpage on our website where you can just fill it out and create a little syllabus that we can use to put this together. And since this is a new experience for both the students and the instructors, one of our new board members, Megan McCool, she is our education coordinator, and she is putting together a lighting and camera guide for instructors so that they can give their students the best experience. Because
that's great. So, Mark, how do people find out about the guide and contact you?
They could just go to our website. They could email me.
The website?
It's still CoastalArtsGuildCT.org. CoastalArtsGuildCT.org.
CoastalArtsGuildCT.org. .org. Okay, that's terrific. So just moving into this idea of teaching, with two students in my household suffering from distance learning in high school and college, online learning generally doesn't currently have a great reputation. But I was struck that several of you remarked that you felt you were becoming better teachers because of through the effects of working online. It somehow forced your attention to different things. We've heard from Alicia. Susie, I wondered if you could comment on your experience.
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I was really disappointed that my session for FIT was canceled in the spring because the college closed down.
You teach at the Fashion Institute of Technology?
Yes, I do. I went there as a young budding fashion designer, and I've been brought back to teach their pre-college programs in fashion illustration and junior trends, which is another illustration course. So the target audience is the middle school age group, and I have taught live before, so I'm really thankful that I've had that experience, because being in the classroom and knowing what is expected of this age group is helpful, and knowing how to communicate with them. Also, having the curriculum kind of thrown into my wheelhouse in order to remold for the virtual situation was helpful. I knew how to budget my time for the live and in-person class, but I had to kind of modify it a little bit for virtual. And I was really scared because I will admit, as you might have gathered, I'm not very technically savvy because I had trouble getting on the Zoom meeting. But I am getting over some of my trepidations with this. And I learned the Meet format, and I had some really great help with that. And I learned that keeping it simple was really the best thing to do. So while I wanted to give my students an inspiring overview of what they were going to learn, I also wanted to try to give them some one-on-one feedback. And it was a little bit challenging because everybody is sort of an open book in this type of forum. But I found that people were really cool. Everybody was sort of on the same playing field. So they were okay. And I tried to make us all friends, you know, so nobody was afraid of the situation. And at the very end, I had everybody present their work. So it was good to have that big goal at the end where they had to really work and refine their looks and have an end project to work towards, and also, you know, defend their point of view. So I think that was
helpful. So how was this different from an in-person, from your in-person experience?
So with in-person, yeah, I think with in-person, I'm able to give them a little bit more one-on-one in private instead of having everybody be in front of everybody. And, you know, if I'm trying to give them suggestions and how to rework something in order to make it more successful, I don't want to call too much attention, especially students at that age. They can be very shy about putting their work forward. So I was really sensitive to that. And I tried to supply them with a lot of materials beforehand. So, you know, like a croquis, a fashion croquis, so they could have that to work with and practice on. And then I also created a lot of slide presentations so I could actually demonstrate what I was talking about. This is something I could do live, but I was really trying to utilize this virtual format and mix it up. What we might do in a live class is have a lot of drawing time. But that's kind of weird if everybody's on a screen and their head is down and they're drawing. I didn't want to utilize our time together that way. So I tried to make it a little bit more interactive.
That's great. So just changing back to Rob and Joseph, you both talked about your experience teaching music online and how you both discovered that actually, students were working harder. I wondered, Joseph, did you have anything? What did you notice about the teaching that you were doing?
I noticed my patience actually went up. I thought it would be difficult and it would go down. but I think, as someone else said, you have to have a sense of nurture and make sure that that care between the teacher and student comes across, because there is that screen in front of you. Also, the students have to work a little bit harder, which puts them sort of on the spot where they have to analyze their music a little bit more. In person, I would always ask them a question and point out the answer almost immediately to sort of guide them. And now they really have to do it themselves. I'm not there to point the music, you know. And they have to, you know, be more aware. And I think most of my students really stepped up to the plate and they've been doing a great job.
That's great. And Rob, did you have anything more to add to that?
Yeah, I would like to put in some element of reality into this in the sense that when it's time again to go back to one-to-one lessons live in person, we will be doing that with great joy in our hearts. This is fine. This is, but it's just a temporary substitute that takes a lot of energy and a lot of good spirit. And we're just bridging a gap here. I mean, you know, we've made some discoveries. I don't think snow days, sick days, and vacation days will ever be the same again, because we know where they are, and we will be able to maintain connections. But that's what this is. This is, you know, 6 months to a year of maintaining connections until we can get back in their presence again.
Agreed.
Right. No, I hear that. So I wanted to talk, we've just got another less than 10 minutes. Just wondering about any opportunities that have opened for people. Do people feel that they have been made more creative in any way? And we often say that boundaries or limitations actually squeeze unexpected creativity from us. Can any of you talk about what you were perhaps most surprised by in terms of new creativity and new opportunities that opened up because of having to shift to the virtual world?
I can share a little bit. So one of the challenges that I had doing a live performance each week was, you know, here I felt like I was really just kind of speaking at the camera, almost like a talk show, and then performing. So it was really just something that people would sit back and watch, which is great. But then you're always thinking about what is the level of engagement, you know, like, and how can I bring more engagement into my performance? And so through the limitations of being virtual and being alone in my gallery doing this work, I developed a way to bring in my participants virtually by pulling their camera feeds through a simultaneous Zoom call. So we would be doing our performances, live streaming them on Facebook and YouTube, but we would also have a simultaneously Zoom call coming in, and we would take their camera feed and project it into the gallery space. So if you were watching on YouTube or Facebook, right. You could actually see everybody kind of become a part of the installation in the room. And it was amazing because I was able to interact with the people that were on the call, and everything that we're doing is, you know, live music, live visuals. It's very upbeat, energetic experience. And so I was kind of able to dance with the participants as they were going around the room, and everybody had huge smiles on their face.
I just came out of doing it. It wasn't something that you were planning. It was just, it came out of the experience of doing it.
It came out of week after week doing it and saying to myself, man, I really miss having a live audience here with us. How can we do that? And let's think technologically, what is available to us right now, and how can we achieve, you know, some way of leveraging technology to bring more engagement? Right. And so we had a lot of fun doing that. And also kind of adding on to that, we started diving down the virtual reality world and bought an Oculus Quest headset. So I'm now just starting to learn how to build the Danger Gallery in 3D space, so that when you put on a headset, I can actually still do my performances that we do each week, but you'd actually be able to be in the gallery with us in a 3D, like a three-dimensional space. So that's coming down the road, but I never really would have thought that this was something I would do if it hadn't been for this pandemic.
And Holly, it's clear that you could be a great resource for people who are wanting to expand their own technical experiences. So it's hollydanger.com?
Hollydanger.com, yeah. I mean, one of the main missions that I started the Danger Gallery with is to find ways of bringing art and technology and shared experiences together. So it's kind of, it works perfectly for us right now.
So just to wrap it up, I am wondering, you know, overall, how will we be different in what we do in the next year or so? What will you take from the experience of these past few months in moving forward? There will be, for many of us, a kind of a hybrid moment when we're doing a mixture of in-person and online. But anything come to mind in terms of what you've really learned in moving forward?
If I can. David, this is Paige from the Mac.
Yes.
I think it's just an overall experience. I mean, the Milford Arts Council supports every single arts genre. And I think what this has done is it has caused all of our committees to begin talking with each other. And actually, yes, we as directors of the Arts Council have been picking up cues from one group and now inserting it into other experiences and developing other types of program virtually. So we're learning from each other and sharing that. I don't think we're ever going to lose the digital aspect. We just expect to continue to grow and develop and change as time goes by. So as much as this has been a scary time, it's also been an extremely exuberantly energetic and educational time as well. It's also been a time of healing. We've been doing a lot of group chats, and a lot of that energy has come in to play as well. The classes that we're putting together now online tend to be about healing and expression and the healing arts in general.
Well, thank you. Those are very good words to end with, I think. So I want to thank everyone. I know we had a lot of people. We weren't able to spend a lot of time with each person, but I think we had a terrific overview of what people have been going through and how people have been really very creative in facing the isolation of this pandemic. And I guess we all look forward to when we can meet and greet without all of these restrictions. So thank you all very much for taking part today. This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. You've been listening to our September edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture, our monthly interview show on WPKN 89.5 FM. Today, we were talking with 12 guests, including artist and designer Migs Burrows, visual artist Alicia Cobb, videographer and new media producer Holly Danger, painter, sculptor, and violist Joseph Demodi, designer and arts nonprofit board president Mark Hannon, artist, educator, curator, and student Nadia Martinez, artist and bassist Susie Mastropietro, poet and painter Shanna Melton, arts council director and theater producer Paige Melio, puppeteer and theater producer Adelka Polak, nonprofit leader, musician, and music teacher Rob Sylvan, and arts advocate, theater producer, and actor Lou Ursone, each discussing the silver linings, the great discoveries they have made by going virtual during this difficult period. If you missed part of this broadcast or just want to hear it again, you can hear the show on WPKN Podcasts on SoundCloud. I'm David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County. Please tune in Monday, October the 12th for the next edition of Spotlight on Arts and Culture.